My name is Bryce. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Hello, everyone on Zoom. You guys are fortunate on Zoom tonight because you don't have to breathe the air in this room. There's definitely a plumbing issue going on. I would like to welcome our one and only newcomer. If anyone else is new or new again, welcome. I can relate to that. It's been quite a journey for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come here and get sober right away. It was quite a tedious process. But let me start back further. I think I was about 14 years old when I took my first drink. And very shortly after that, I consumed some alcohol in another way. And when I found alcohol, it was about the best thing that ever happened to me. I felt this sense of freedom when I was intoxicated that I had never experienced in life up until that point. And as I continued to drink, I got more of that freedom. And every form of alcohol after that first drink, I experienced a new sense of freedom. And I didn't run into a lot of trouble at first. I didn't have problems with the law. I was kind of a weekend partier, I guess. And it worked very well. I enjoyed drinking. I enjoyed other substances. And I wanna read a little bit out of the doctor's opinion. And it's just a short sentence that that really helped me identify what it meant to be alcoholic, because I really struggled with that for a long time, and I didn't feel like I fit in AA. And so in the doctor's opinion, Silkworth, he writes that we believe, and he says, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, and that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. He goes on to say that these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. So that sentence, alcohol in any form at all, I don't know what it means for you guys, but I know what it means for me. And alcohol took on many forms for me. And what I've learned through my experience is that I can quit drinking if I'm properly medicated, right? And I was properly medicated for a number of years. And like I said, at first there wasn't much trouble. It was alcohol worked, and I felt this sense of freedom every time I drank, and it just progressed for me into a place where it started to become more than the weekends, you know. And it was a slow process. It didn't happen all at once. And for me, trying these different forms of alcohol, I finally narrowed down the one that I liked the best, right, that produced the effect I was after. And once I found that alcohol, I became an everyday drinker. And it started, a change took place. And so I thought at the time there was, it had progressed to a place where drinking and staying loaded was the, number one priorities, you know. Other life responsibilities and external, circumstances took second place to being loaded. And so I slowly started to not be able to hold a job and, you know, spend every money I earned, on booze and then the trouble came, right? Cause now I'm starting to commit felonies and doing what I had to do, to have my medication. And so I think I was about 24 years old the first time I went to a treatment facility. And that's where I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous and 12-step recovery. And I hadn't drank liquid alcohol in probably 2 years at that point. And so I end up in this treatment home, and I start learning about some things, and they send me to these meetings. But at that time, I was kind of forced into treatment from my family. I hadn't been sent by the courts or had any kind of probation at that time. My first experience was just like, hey, my family said, you know, you need help, dude. You know, you need to go to rehab. And so I went with the expectation of, you know, being treated, right? And I'm going to leave rehab and I'm going to learn how to control this thing so that it's not a daily deal. And I don't think I could really accept at that time, you know, life without alcohol, period. I still was experiencing some freedom from drinking and I just, I don't know, I couldn't accept that. And so I went to AA, but I was very much an outsider at that time. You know, at the beginning of this meeting, the format says if you have other problems, you should go somewhere else. And so I was the type of guy that was like, screw that meeting. That meeting's stupid. I don't want to go to that meeting, you know, because I'm not an alcoholic. I don't drink every day. And I didn't know. I didn't know what it meant to be alcoholic, is the truth. And so for a number of years after that, about 8, I think, I bounced in and out of rehabs, in and out of the justice system. Usually every time I went back to rehab after that first time was on a court order. I would have suspended prison sentences and, you know, go to this rehab, complete probation, you don't got to go to prison type of deal. And I caught a lot of breaks that way. And I kept coming back to meetings through those treatment homes. And I would say the second or third time I was in one of those places, I had a very strong understanding that I was not being a successful person, you know, but I didn't know that I was suffering from alcoholism. I didn't know what that meant. And so I would ask someone to be my sponsor and start showing me how to live in abstinence. And I would get through a couple steps, I think. But what would happen is I would leave that treatment center and I would be physically healthy again. I would do a lot of push-ups, and I would start eating right, and I would feel better. I would feel like, okay, this time is, you know, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna get a job, and I'm gonna follow the rules, and, you know, I'm not gonna drink anymore. And so I would try, and I would go to meetings. Even after leaving the treatment home, I would keep going to meetings, and I would listen to what the people in AA said. And I would try to follow their suggestions. But what happened over and over again for me is I would come to that point where life, wasn't treating me right. I wasn't getting ahead like I deserved. And drinking sounded good again. And so I would relapse, and as soon as I drank, this phenomenon of craving that I just read about would take effect, and I wouldn't have control of how much I took in or when I would stop. And when you're going through that, at least for me, I was confused about it. I didn't know I was suffering from a craving. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I had been to a lot of meetings in AA, but somehow I didn't really know. And in 2014, I was in trouble with the law again, facing another stretch in prison. And I got another break, and they offered me a drug court. And so I took it. Sounded a hell of a lot better than doing 8 or 9 years in custody. And so I took the program. And at that point, I was really, desperate for an answer. Man, I was lost, and so I started off again, and fortunately that program has high supervision, and so I was able to stay sober and complete that program. In that time, I got a sponsor, and I worked all of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. At least I worked the 12 steps that guy told me about. And what ended up happening is I was almost done with that program. So I was somewhere at a year and a half sober, and that guy relapsed. And I asked that gentleman to be my sponsor because I used to drink with him. And he had sobered up several years before I got put into that court program, and I thought something had happened to him, right? Something had changed in him, because I know how hard this guy parties, and he's sober now, and he, you know, had his own place, and he had a job, and he was happy, and so I did what everything that guy told me to do. And of course, I continued to go to meetings, a whole lot of meetings, because of that court program. And when he relapsed, I found another sponsor, you know, because I was told, well, you probably need to find somebody else. And so I found someone else, and I started the step work process over another way, but it was in, the other fellowship, the one for drug addicts, and so I started that process, and I got to a little over 2 years sober, and I relapsed again. But this time, I was the secretary of a meeting. I was attending meetings regularly. I had started to read this book a little bit. But again, I was going through the process from a different program. And That relapse was different, and it, from the very start, I was drinking against my will. I didn't want to drink. Every day I woke up and I felt trapped. And that lasted for 4 months, and I was able to get sequestered away and detoxed one more time. And and this time I was completely demoralized. I'm going to read another section in the book that describes exactly what I was going through, and it's in the beginning of chapter 11, towards the bottom of the page, and it describes my journey in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous and sobriety. And it says, now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better. I work better, having a better time. And in those short times of sobriety, in that 2 years that I had been sober, I felt that way. I felt better. I worked better. I was having a better time in life. It goes on to say, as ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a Sally. And what they mean about that is people who have been spiritually awakened because of this process and are being treated in Alcoholics Anonymous, we see when someone's dry here, right? When they're just not drinking. And so it says, we know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. And that described me for about 8 years, that exact description. But this is what happened that last time, and I was, like I said, sobered up again, and it said, someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. And that's how I felt, a little over 4 years ago. I wished for the end. I was tired of trying to get sober. I was tired of attempting sobriety one day at a time. That didn't sound appealing to me. I still wanted to drink in my subconscious, but I didn't want the problems associated with my drinking. And what happened at that time is there was this group that had been going on here in Visalia for probably since the very first time I went to rehab in about 2009. And I saw these guys around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard them speak at meetings. And to be honest, at first I was put off by them. I thought that particular group was arrogant, that they were going around telling people in AA and other programs that they weren't doing sobriety the right way. and I even went to their meeting a couple times, and it was just really weird. And I felt like it was almost like a cult or something. But I was buddies with one of the guys that was kind of instrumental in that group in the beginning, and he would come see me when I'd be back at rehab one more time, and he would approach me, right, with some of what's in this book. Nah, man, I'm cool, you know, I think I need to be in that other program, you know, more than AA, and I just didn't see it. What I couldn't see is that is that he was free and I wasn't. That he was coming to visit me at rehab one more time. I just couldn't see it. I don't know. But that last time, I was desperate, and I was almost at the point of just accepting that I'm going to be an active drinker the rest of my life. And this is my life. I'm going to be in and out of custody, and I'm never going to be a good father to my children. My wife, who I was engaged to at the time, should get as far away from me as she can, because it's going to be bad, right? That's the place I was in. And so having known that friend throughout the years, and knowing that something was different with that group, when I sobered up this last time, I went directly to that group. And I asked a gentleman that I had never met before to be my sponsor and to take me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I knew for sure about that group is that they thoroughly went through this book, right? And I had that example of my friend who had been sober at that time 4 years ago, probably about 8 or 9 years. About 7 years. And so I knew something was working for him, you know, and you could see it in him. He was free. And so I started this process, and something's changed in me, and I can't, pinpoint it exactly. But I've had this spiritual awakening that this book promises, and it's really a trip, man, because I look back on my life, in active drinking and using, and it's almost like, it's like it's foreign to me now. I used to question that guy when he would approach me at the rehabs, and I would say, "So you're telling me you never think about drinking?" He's like, "Nope, I don't think about it. Never comes to mind." And I just couldn't understand that, because that's almost all I thought about, right? And when shit got bad, I definitely thought about it. But I experienced that freedom today. Somewhere in this 12-step process, going through it with a qualified sponsor who takes you through exactly how it's outlined in this book, I've been set free. And I can sit here and talk about it all day long, but the truth is this is an experiential deal, and you have to experience it for yourself, you know? One of the biggest things about step one, and why I like that step the most, is you really get to learn about alcoholism. What does it mean to be an alcoholic? You know, I didn't know. And the first aspect is this physical part, right? It says, in the doctor's opinion, all these and many others, it's right after he's describing several different types of alcoholics as far as their emotional natures. He says, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. So there's only one symptom, right? In the physical aspect of alcoholism, and that's if once I start to drink, can I control the amount I take after that? And like I said, having not drank liquid alcohol for a number of years, it was hard for me to relate to that. But I looked at it and I went all the way back to when I first started drinking. And when I first started drinking, I'd go out to a keg party, right, in high school. And I would go with the intentions of having a good time, right? Meeting some girls. Honey, close your ears. You know, maybe I'd get laid, right? These were my intentions in going to the party. But as soon as I get to the party and have that first drink, I would start looking around. There's a lot of people here at this party. And I'd look over at the keg, and there's already a line forming at the keg, and my brain was overwhelmed with the thought of that beer running out of that keg and me not getting enough. And so I'd be over at the keg, lifting it up, right, see how much is left periodically. And what would happen is I would get blackout drunk, and I would be off in the corner somewhere puking, right? I'm no longer having a good time. The phenomenon of craving. And so I got to identify that, and I got to see that no matter what form of alcohol I took in, I had that one symptom. And so I moved on, and I learned more about what it means to be alcoholic. I learned that I have this mental obsession, that this disease centers in my mind, and that I've been under some delusions, you know. And in step one, how it's written says we were powerless over. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and their lives had become unmanageable. But in chapter 3, it talks about it a little bit different. It says that we had to admit to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. It says this is the first step in recovery. And so looking at it from that different perspective, I need to know what it means to be alcoholic to be able to admit that I suffer from this thing. Right? I need a starting point. And so I learned more about this mental obsession. And then I learned about being spiritually sick, having this spiritual malady, and there's a whole lot of promises in this book. And, you know, the very first one is in the foreword to the first edition, right? This would have been the first thing you saw if you had the first book, and it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It says, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And so I got to learn about becoming recovered. That I didn't have to not drink one day at a time. That there was a real answer for me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I stayed desperate and willing, that I could find it. And today I practice the design for living that's outlined in this book. And I continue to learn, right? I'm going back through the work right now with a new sponsor, because I want to continue to grow. And the other thing that I do pretty well here is the 12th step. And I believe that that's key to my ability to stay. In the forward to the second edition, it says, it's also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. Vital, you know. I think about that word. I think about being at the hospital, right? And beep, beep, beep. Vital signs, right? It's vital for me to be a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what's, I hear every once in a while people share that they're nervous about being a sponsor, or they're you know, they're scared about doing it. But all you have to do is take somebody through this book. It's already outlined in this book. So it's really nothing to be scared of, and it's vital, right? If I don't do it, I know without a shadow of a doubt that, I will become so spiritually sick that alcohol will be a good idea again. Because I've experienced it, right? There's lots of promises in this book. There's also a lot of requirements, you know. And I'm still learning, right? There's still times where I can be delusional, you know. I'm self-centered by nature, and so my brain is wired to think about me. And I have this, tendency to rely upon me, right? The self-reliance. On page 61, it talks about, being selfish, and they give you all these, this analogy about an actor running the show, and Bill, my favorite consideration on this page, Bill writes, "Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well?" I'm a victim of that delusion, in sobriety. I think that I need to do this and I need to do that, and I'm always thinking ahead and solving problems that don't exist, and I don't get happy out of doing that. I get sick. But thank God I have this process. You know, I believe, with everything in me that I wouldn't be standing here today if I wasn't a sponsor here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have become a step one expert in AA. Because, people don't stick around, right? They have their own ideas, and like me, you know, for a long time I had my own ideas about what it was going to look like, you know, if I only managed well, I could be sober, you know. I always viewed it as external circumstance, you know. If I just had the right job, if I just had the right woman, which I do now, but I didn't then. If I just had all of these things, I could be sober and be happy about it, right? That's not true. This is an internal condition that has to be treated. And what's been amazing for me is that God has come into my life, and when I focus on helping others and staying in this process, and treating my internal condition, God takes care of all the outside stuff. He writes the checks. I get employed. I get a house. I get cars. I get all of the things on the outside that portray success, but that's only because I'm continuing to seek God's will and give this thing away. You know, I'll touch on the 12th step. In AA, we love to hear the ninth step promises. They sound really good, and we read them at most meetings. But on page 97 of our book, there's kind of an unofficial 12-step promises, and it says, "Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them." It says, "Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be." And here's the promises. "It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, consoling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. She does say that, by the way. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. Jesus. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. And right after this, these promises, what I have written in my book is, am I willing to help others? Right? Am I willing to spend a large amount of my time taking other people through the 12 steps of AA? And I am willing today because of the freedom that I've been given, because the obsession has been removed, and because nothing else ever worked. I went to probably every treatment center in Tulare County. I learned a lot about relapse prevention and triggers and all of the things that I need to plan and avoid to not drink and use again. None of that stuff worked. None of it. I need a solution to this internal condition. And I need God's help, you know. And I've been blessed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't go back to that life even if I could. And the truth is that I can't if I continue to stay grounded in AA and be of service to the alcoholic who still suffers. My name is Bryce. I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you.